This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Doctor Who is brought to you by the Amazon Store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
I'm a doctor. I've lived for over 2,000 years.
I am Scottish. I can complain about things.
Shush.
Welcome to The Secrets of Doctor Who. I'm Father Roderick, podcasting from the Netherlands. And this show, this new show on SQPN.com, is dedicated to the fabulous Doctor Who series. Now in its eighth season, that is, of course, the eighth season of the new Doctor Who. And we are going to talk about the first episode of Series 8, and that is Deep Breath. And joining me today are four huge Doctor Who fans. First of all, from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Stephanie Zimmer.
That was a good attempt. Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. I apologize. I'm from Holland. What do I know? Stephanie, also the host of a podcast about television shows called TV Rewind.
Correct.
We're excited to have you on the show. Also joining us from Malta in Montana, not the island of Malta, Father Corey Stika. Father Corey.
How's it going?
I'm good. I'm glad to have you on the show. This is the first podcast that you feature in on SQPN, I think. Except for the occasional appearance on Catholic Weekend.
Yeah. I had regular visits with Captain Jeff and the gang. But let's be the first as a regular contributor. And I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Also joining us all the way from San Diego, Jimmy Akin.
Howdy, Father. How you doing?
I am great. And I'm so excited to have you on the show as well. We've been planning this podcast for years, and it finally materialized.
Indeed. The new season starring Peter Capaldi is a good jumping on point.
Absolutely. And finally, also joining us from Boston in the United States, Dom Bettinelli.
Hello, Father.
I'm excited to have you on the show as well. We are colleagues in podcasting. We do a show together called The Secrets of Star Wars, but we won't be talking about Star Wars, except for the occasional reference. Today we're going to talk about Deep Breath. And before we start, let's just remind us of what happened in that episode. And here's the sound of the official TV trailer.
The Doctor needs us, you more than anyone.
Bring the carriage, now!
The question is, have there been any similar murders?
The Doctor? What's he doing here?
There is trouble. Where else would he be?
You've redecorated.
I don't like it.
Doctor Who, Saturday, 23rd of August on BBC One.
Well, and of course, that was the premiere, not just in the United States or in the UK, but also in the United States. In Australia, they did a live broadcast in the middle of the night, and there were more than 100,000 Australians that woke up in the middle of the night to watch it. And then, of course, it got its subsequent premieres all over the world. Jimmy, can you remind us of what happened in this episode?
Sure. This is the first episode starring Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor. And so it is a kind of momentous episode because it's a one where we get to meet a new Doctor. It's longer. It's almost twice the length of a normal Doctor Who episode. Basically, what happens is we begin in London in the 19th century, and there's a Tyrannosaurus Rex roaming the city and menacing Big Ben and so forth. And the Tyrannosaurus then coughs up the TARDIS, and we meet the Doctor and his companion Clara, who have just gone through a traumatic experience, and they're kind of disoriented. The Doctor particularly, because he's just regenerated, and that often introduces a kind of madness, an instability for a time, which they play to comic effect. Now, since we're in the 19th century in London, we meet the Paternoster Gang, which is a group of people we've known from previous series, and they help the Doctor. They also try to help Clara understand the change that's come over the Doctor, because she was very attached to the previous Doctor, played by Matt Smith, who was the 11th Doctor. Peter Capaldi is very different. He's much older, and Clara is having a hard time adjusting. While they're doing that, the Doctor goes on the run and begins investigating a series of unexpected murders, including that of the dinosaur. And he and Clara meet up strangely, at a restaurant they both thought the other was drawing them to, which turns out to be run by robots. Only these aren't ordinary robots, as if any were in the 19th century. They are robots that use components of the human body for various purposes, including repairing themselves. And it eventually turns out they're trying to get to some place that they describe as the promised land. It also turns out that they detect whether you're alive based on whether you're breathing. And so you can hide from them if you take a deep breath. There's the title of the movie, or the title of the episode, and you hold your breath. The doctor and Clara have engaged them, as does the Paternoster gang, in combat. And it appears that the doctor throws the lead robot from a very high place and kills him. But that's left ambiguous. So they haven't really told us, did the robot jump or fall, or did the doctor push him? But it seems to be implied he pushed him. At the end of the episode, the doctor and Clara reunite, and Clara even gets a phone call through the magic of time travel from the previous doctor telling her to go ahead and remain a companion of the new doctor, that he needs her at this point, and she agrees to do that.
Thank you so much for that recap. And, well, my first question is always going to be, what is your overall assessment of the episode? How did you like it? If you would rate it between 0 and 10, what number would you give to, or what rating would you give to this show? And let me start with Stephanie.
Well, I would say for me, for starting a new series with a new doctor, it's always going to be the establishing of him as the doctor. And I felt like he was getting his way as the episode went, and definitely by the end of the episode, definitely embraced that role with the nice jacket and looking very dapper in that role. So I feel like the main part of the episode that was important for me was his arc. The other parts were just all over the place and so many different plots, and I had to watch the episode twice and I still couldn't tell you what happened. And thank you, Jimmy, for a better assessment than I could have given. But I liked the episode, but I didn't love it and I didn't enjoy it that much. But yeah, so that's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say maybe a 6 on this episode. It wasn't a great episode for me.
What about you, Dom? You posted on Facebook that, well, you had some mixed feelings about this new doctor, and you would have to go through a certain cycle to get used to this particular doctor, which is probably the same cycle that everyone goes through for each new incarnation of the doctor, right?
Yeah, I feel like the regeneration episode, the one where we get that new doctor and he's in that sort of manic phase as he's adjusting to his new self. It's a difficult episode. And I looked back to the previous two, to 10 and 11 when they first showed up, and those were episodes I would have considered uneven as well. Like even that first episode with Matt Smith and Amy Pond, it was difficult, and it was hard to get a grasp of who this character was going to be. And it was the same way here. On the other hand, I really felt like that Peter Capaldi had hold of his character. Like he had to play this manic character, but he has an idea of where he's going with it. And I just feel like it was a bit of an uneven episode, but I would give it a solid 7, just because I felt like it established the new character, the new old character, the new Doctor Who, established the new Doctor in himself, gave us some real solid bits of personality to hang things on. We're getting an idea of who he is, especially by the end of that episode. We had a much better idea of him and of his relationship with Clara going forward.
What about you, Father Corey? How did you adapt to the new Doctor?
Well, I don't know if I could really add much to what Dom and Stephanie said, because they really kind of expressed my feelings as well. My focus was to see who this new doctor was, to see how he was going to act, how he was going to play the character. And I think we definitely got a feel for that, that he was going to be a little bit more gruff, a little bit more not as, to use kind of a phrase, touchy-feely as some of the earlier or previous doctors had been, especially 10 and 11, that he was going to be more alien And I think we see that, you know, like, for example, right from the beginning, oh, he speaks dinosaur. Who would have thought that dinosaur is even a language? And yet he speaks it fluently to the point where he was translating it when he was unconscious.
Yes.
You know, so I do think we got that. There were aspects I wasn't comfortable with. It was very it did feel like it jumped around quite a bit. They tried to it felt like they tried to get you had the plot line of the doctor figuring himself out and then about two or three other plot lines kind of floating in and out and trying to be woven in. I didn't feel they did a very good job of that. That they kind of stuck some things in there that if they would have left out would have strengthened the story instead of weakening it. But that, you know, just kind of that feeling, I can't really put my finger on exactly what threads they should have left out. But it was just kind of that general feeling like things were thrown in for the sake of throwing them in. So I would agree with Stephanie's, and I would also give it kind of about a 6.
What about you, Jimmy?
I'd probably give it a 7 or an 8. I thought that I liked very much the stuff they did in the first half of the show, particularly with the Doctor in his kind of post-regeneration frenzy. There was a lot of good comedy in that. At one point, he's accusing Clara of having regenerated. And then there's another scene where he's freaking out because he doesn't understand the concept of a bedroom. And he's yes. angrily demanding to know who invented it. And it makes no sense to him. And while he's ranting about that, he points at a mirror in the bedroom and says, "Don't look in that mirror. It's furious." and so I really enjoyed that. What I didn't enjoy it nearly as much was the stuff with the robots. The idea that robots are going to detect whether you're alive based on whether you're breathing is somewhat implausible, but I can give them a pass on that.
They're very old robots,
what I have
right?
a harder time giving them a pass on is the ultimate solution, because it turns out that the main robot, the robot leader, is, in the Doctor's words, the control node. And that means that we're getting a standard cliched plot where all you have to do to defeat everybody is damage the control node. It's critical node failure. And it's a cliched plot. It's paint-by-numbers writing, and that I don't like.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. I would give this episode a solid 8, and it's mostly because it was different from what I expected. When I followed the news about the new Doctor, and we were kind of being prepared for a very serious, more alien Doctor, who would be grumpy, who would be darker than the previous two Doctors. And so I was like, I'm not even sure if I'm going to like this, because I was very much into the kind of like cheerful, happy, funny style of the previous two Doctors. And I was so surprised that I was laughing out loud all the time. There were so many quips, so many great jokes in this one. And so for the timing of Capaldi is great. He's got fantastic comedic timing. I also really liked how they wove into this kind of eclectic episode, which, you know, it's not the first time that Doctor Who episodes are like this, where it's a little bit all over the place and you wonder if they, you know, just didn't have enough time to curate it a little bit. But despite that, they managed to weave in a couple of very fundamental themes and even constructed it structurally so that we would see the different dimensions and, you know, the parallels between the characters and their relationships. And that's something that, just viewing it for the second time, started to dawn on me. And I was like, wow, that is pretty good writing. So it was, yeah, mixed feelings about the plot, but huge appreciation for the comedic aspects of it, for Capaldi. To me, after a few minutes, Capaldi was the Doctor. I just didn't even the final bit with Matt Smith, reappearing, the 11th Doctor. I was like, you know what? I don't even need that. Perhaps Clara needs it. Perhaps part of the audience needs it, especially the people that might have not seen the transition, because that, of course, was done in the Christmas episode, which usually appears much later than the entire season. But to me, it was almost redundant. It was like, yeah, I'm so done with Matt Smith. Just give me more of Capaldi. So, and that's quite an accomplishment to... And there was this one thing that was like, I know this guy. I know this face. And I know him from Doctor Who. And it took me a while to realize that actually Capaldi played that
guy from Pompeii.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot which season it was. But I was like, yeah, of course, that's him. And I think they even hinted at a way to explain that. That, you know, he remembers faces, and faces have a meaning.
There's apparently more to it than that. In addition to playing the gentleman from Pompeii in the fires of Pompeii, he also played a British government official in the Torchwood series, Children of Earth.
Right.
And the previous show producer had an explanation that was never used on air for why they looked the same. Mm-hmm. And so the current show producer, Stephen Moffat, contacted the previous one and said, given that we're casting Peter Capaldi as the new Doctor, does your explanation still work? And he thought about it and said, yes. And so apparently they're going to pay that off. And they're setting up in this first episode where he's wondering about where his face came from. They're setting up the future revelation of how they're all connected.
It's my face, but who did the wrinkling? I love that. Well, let's talk a little bit about the new Doctor and in which way he differs from the previous two Doctors. More serious. This is a Doctor that does not flirt. Also, who doesn't just
well? He flirts with the dinosaur.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he makes sure that the dinosaur understands that it's, you know, nothing serious. I love that one shot at the end where Clara embraces him, and he's like, "I don't think I do that stuff anymore." And you see his hands like stretched out in panic almost.
And she says, "I don't think you get a vote."
Yes. But how is this new Doctor? Stephanie, you said you had you needed some time to get used to this Doctor. Do you think you will get used to him?
I think so. I'm not totally on board yet. And it's confusing to me because I'm a newer Who viewer. I've only seen the newer series, mm-hmm. so I don't have context of the older series. But with those other previous Doctors, it was pretty instant for me to like them as a person and to see them as the character, but I'm not quite there, but I'm on the way.
What do you like most about this Doctor?
Well, I like that he really knows the character. Obviously, the actor is a fan of the show and mm-hmm. has been watching a long time, so he knows what the Doctor is and who he is. So he's embraced the fact that he's this guy and he can pull it off. He's very, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but he is the Doctor because I'm explaining this horribly.
No, I think you're expressing what a lot of people, a lot of the viewers are experiencing. And in a way, Clara in the story is our representative. She has that same kind of ambiguity about the new Doctor. And yeah, it's him, but what's with the old face and the gray hair?
Right.
And I think a lot of her storyline is about reconciling herself with this new Doctor and seeing kind of the person behind the face.
Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, she is acting as the audience throughout the episode, is trying to figure out who he is and how he is the same person than he was before.
And it seems to me that this is kind of an overarching theme of this whole episode. It is looking beyond the appearances. You see that with the dinosaur. People say, oh, it's a dinosaur. Well, actually, it's a she, and she's lonely. And, it's Doctor Who. The Doctor is kind of telling us the person behind the dinosaur, in a way. And that's why he's so upset, because to him, it's not just a monster. There's much more to this animal. There is, I think, also a big similarity, a parallel between the relationship between the Doctor, the new Doctor, and Clara on the one hand, and Madame Vastra and Jenny, where it's always, it's kind of that same strange combination between a woman and an alien, and they're or a different species, and they're even married. I mean, so that's been one of the recurring elements of their relationship. And at first, I was a bit irked. I was like, "Yeah, we've seen this before. You don't need to re-emphasize that time and again in this episode that they're married, etc." But then I thought about it. It's like, well, the reason that they're emphasizing is probably because they want to create a clearly recognizable parallel between this. Strange relationship that's still beyond the differences seem to work, and this the relationship that is growing between or regenerating in a way between Clara and the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
There is, of course, as usual, the overall plot, and then there are. In every episode of Doctor Who, the references, and I think that for this premiere episode, they made clear that they made a huge effort to make sure that the fans would see those little secrets and hints. Perhaps together we can do a communal exercise to try to dig up these secrets of Doctor Who and where did we see the little hints and references to previous stuff.
Well, in your introduction for the show here, you picked one of them that goes back quite a ways, and it's "You've Remodeled, I Don't Like It." And that one has gone through, I'm trying to think
that's been since the Second Doctor, and it was that line was used when the Second Doctor appears in the Third Doctor's era at UNIT headquarters on Earth. And yeah. He notes that UNIT headquarters has been redecorated, and then he instantly says, "I don't like it."
Yeah, that's right. I thought it was one of those Three Doctors or Five Doctors special. I couldn't remember which one, but yeah, it was that Three Doctors special. You know, so that's one of those that's been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, that fits the overall arc of this episode too, because the Doctor himself has been redecorated, and Clara doesn't like it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a way, you're right. And I was thinking also that the reshape if the new interior of the TARDIS is almost like a reflection of this new Doctor. He looks kind of small on the outside, a bit cold and stark, but on the inside, this time you see these big warm colors. It's very brownish. It's very and the whole Victorian the chair and the bookshelves and all that. So it's almost as if the TARDIS reflects this character that we still only know from the outside, and we start to glimpse inside and we discover there's actually way more to this new Doctor than we thought, and he's also capable perhaps of a lot of warmth. It's just hidden by his cynicism.
One of the things that's one of the things they really hammer in this is when they meet the robots, the Doctor is saying, "I've seen this before, robots that are using human parts." And he says, "My brain is rebooting due to the regeneration." So he can't remember where he's seen them. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's a callback to an episode called "The Girl in the Fireplace," which mm-hmm. was in the 10th Doctor's era. And in that episode, they were on a ship that was like the SS Marie Antoinette. And in this episode, he realizes they're on the sister ship, the SS Madame de Pompadour.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a notable callback.
So reverse that.
Yeah, I think it was
the other way around.
Pompadour's one.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But are these droids the same droids then? Or I felt there was still a difference between these two, you know.
Well, they're the same class of droids, I think you could say. They weren't the same exact ones. I think the way they kind of explained it is they had crashed on Earth years and years and years and years ago and were keeping themselves alive by basically rebuilding themselves constantly. And that's why the Doctor had the whole thing about if you take a broom and you replace the top of the broom and the handle, is it still the same broom? Obviously not.
And with that whole metaphor, he's also talking about himself, right?
Correct.
What constitutes a person, ultimately? Is it just the exterior? Is it the character? I mean, that's a very interesting philosophical question as well. And I think this has to do with a discussion that we might have for the second episode. You know, what ultimately is the core of a human being, or in this case, a Time Lord, it's almost like a human being, a little bit more powerful. But I think this is about the soul. you know, what makes the soul of a person? And that's much deeper and more than just a character or just, you know, brain functions. And that is kind of interesting in the context of a show that seemed to have much more of a kind of an atheist slant to it, especially in the last few seasons. What do you think about that, Dom?
I think that that you're right, that this the current the aim, I think, in the first episode and then we'll see later in the second episode, is it's really asking those fundamental questions about self, about what does it mean to be, you know, me, what is my relationship to the universe, you know, who am I, what is good, what is evil. We're you know, this new doctor, this older doctor, it seems to be, you know, a philosopher in a sense. He's the philosopher doctor. You know, he's not the comic doctor, the warrior doctor we sometimes see. I felt like Nine was much more of a purposeful doctor. But here is it's almost a philosopher doctor who's sort of exploring the big questions, at least so far. You know, there's a lot been said about how dark this new doctor is, or how brusque he can be. But the other doctors were too. It's just when he does it, it has this darker tinge around the edges. This devil may care. This you know, I don't care whose feelings get hurt sort of thing that sometimes comes out. It's an interesting mix.
It's the eyebrows. It's definitely the eyebrows.
You
can open a bottle with those eyebrows.
I just want to add one little side note here is this Scottish accent can be so thick sometimes. I have to stop and rewind like two or three times to figure out what he said. I am not used to the sometimes very thick and very quick Scottish accent, you know, when he throws a line out quickly. So this is going to take some effort on my part to decode him at points.
That's a big advantage of watching this with subtitles. you always understand what's happening. And that's, by the way, on the BBC website for those of our listeners that live in the UK, if you use the iPlayer, it actually has fantastic subtitles in various colors. It is, you know, the best subtitles I've ever seen for a TV show. And I love the whole use of different colors to show who is talking at one point. And yeah, and they definitely help with the Scottish as well. You know, the thing about identity and who are you truly and what constitutes a person is also part of this whole theme of getting older. You know, this is an older, grayer doctor, and time passes and it affects people and it affects us all. And so there is a certain – I read an article via Facebook. Someone pointed me to it that said basically Doctor Who is a very – sad show. There is a melancholy in this show because it's always about this doctor that just keeps on going. He's able to regenerate, but the people around him come and go. You know, the companions, they come and they go. There's a bit of love and affection, and then they die and they just go away again. And it seemed to me that in this episode, at least, the new doctor also has to cope with that gray hair and the, you know, the traces on his face. And he realizes that he, too, is changing. And so what do you do? Do you try to negate it? Do you try to step over it? Or do you embrace the change? And this whole, you know, passing and getting older. I think there was a quote somewhere where he says, you know, go with the change, but don't forget who you've been. Do you remember that? It was all about the many faces of the doctor, almost like a metaphor of the many people that we have been in life. Our faces were different 20 years ago. Well, not for all of us, but definitely my face was different. And it's almost as if you look back on your own life and you think of who you were as a teenager, how you behaved as a toddler, how you behaved like a 30-year-old, it's almost as if you've been a different person. And yet it's still you. So it's and a lot of people have trouble getting older, losing their hair and, you know, becoming gray. And this episode, I think, had a very strong message of, you know what, it's unavoidable, but embrace it. Go with it.
One of the things that's interesting about the age issue is that this is a kind of a return to classic Doctor Who. They'd been pushing the age of the Doctor younger and younger between 9 and 11 to where Matt Smith was the youngest person ever to play the Doctor.
Yes.
And they couldn't go much further in that direction. And, you know, you don't want a six-year-old playing the Doctor.
No.
And so they needed to kind of push the age in the opposite direction. And so the current Doctor is actually the same age as the first Doctor was when he played the part. Mm-hmm. And actually the first three Doctors were all past middle age. And the fourth was middle-aged, and it wasn't until the fifth that we got the first young Doctor. So for long-time fans, having an older Doctor is kind of a return to the normal, or at least a return to the original.
Yeah, definitely. Even the character, in a way, I grew up with Tom Baker's Doctor.
Oh, yes.
And especially in the first season or the first part of his run as a Doctor, I remember him being distant and not being very approachable and certainly not being cuddly or embracing everyone, you know. And
yeah.
I have to say that especially with Matt Smith, it was getting a little bit old in a way. It was like, okay, I think I want a Doctor with a little bit more depth. And that is why I was a little bit, even a bit irked by Clara's attitude. Although I still think that they put that in for the purpose of the audience that might still miss that younger Doctor. But I was like, yeah, get over it. This is the Doctor. What did you expect? You know, he was never supposed to be this dashing, young, handsome guy that falls in love with his companion. That's just not the way of the Doctor.
Another question that's kind of interesting is which Doctor or Doctors are they trying to model Peter Capaldi's Doctor after? It's often been observed that, like, Matt Smith's Doctor was very much like the second Doctor, Patrick Troughton, in his personality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also been the 10th Doctor has often been compared to Peter Davison's 5th Doctor in personality. And so there have been a lot of questions about which of the previous Doctors are they drawing on for Peter Capaldi's character. Some people have suggested the first Doctor, who could be quite gruff.
Mm-hmm.
Some have noted the third Doctor may be playing a role here. In fact, his costume was similar to Peter Capaldi's. And they are likely drawing on some of those gruffer elements because some years ago they established that the Doctor was eventually maybe going to turn into an evil figure called the Veilyard around this time in his life. And so I think they're setting up that plot line to see what's going to happen with that. They have a risk, though, because if they make the Doctor too unlikable, it'll damage the show. And that
yes.
happened with Colin Baker's Doctor, the 6th Doctor, who was just viewed as universally unlikable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a thin line. It's a tightrope. But, you know, the gray hair might even be symbolic of the kind of the moral grayness of this new Doctor. I don't know. Could be.
And in the next episode, we'll even have him asking,
yes.
Am I a good man?
Yes, indeed, indeed.
One thing I'd like about the age issue is, you know, so we have the age of Peter Capaldi. We also have the age of the Doctor himself. You know, up until the end of Series 7, the Doctor had been, you know, maybe 1,000 years old. And even before that, I mean, he rapidly aged. At the beginning of the new Doctor series, he was, you know, I think 700, 800 years old was the number around there. Now he's 2,000. And,
right.
And he spent most of that time at the last episode, The Time of the Doctor. How did that change the man? You know, what did all that time do to him? How did it age him? I mean, he spent half of his life now in that last that period that we see in Time of the Doctor, and so that effect it carries on into now Series 8. For us, it's been you know a long year, but for him, it's been 1,000 years, and
yes.
so. You know, we have to kind of get used to it. And for Clara, it's the same way. She's like us. She is trying to grasp this idea that he's been away for 1,000 years.
And she's complaining about the fact that he's away for 3 weeks to get coffee.
Yeah.
You know, that's like...
It's the most commitment the Doctor has ever shown.
Right. And I think for the Doctor, three weeks is like nothing compared to the thousands of years that he's been around.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting to see what road he will take. I still think that with the whole, you know, I'm Scottish, so I can complain, almost like using his Scottish, his new identity as an excuse for his grumpiness from time to time. I think as long as they keep in the humor, I'm fine. With, you know, even some gravitas and some darkness in his character. He is so hilarious at times that I don't mind. You know, there is another character, a movie character that he made me think of, and it perhaps is just especially the first episode. But I immediately thought Doc Brown from Back to the Future. I was like, he has that same kind of frantic, hectic behavior. It's like, Marty, we have to go back. And there seems the same kind of unpredictability. You never know what he's going to do. And he's kind of like, he acts sometimes very harshly. I remember the whole encounter with the homeless man. It was like, I want your coat. But it's cold. Yeah, I'm cold too. What's the use of us, both of us being cold? But it's almost as if that's not truly because he's unlikable or he is grumpy or evil. But he's just like, he doesn't see the logic of two people being cold, whereas one has a coat and, you know, seems to be sort of kind of like he's all over the place. And so he doesn't realize what he's saying, but he doesn't, you know, he's not really being nasty.
He's being clueless.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it feels. I have a big, big question about this whole episode. It's one of the big mysteries that is set up in this first episode of the new season. And that is the coda to this episode, the final moment where we've just had that very emotional reconciliation between Clara and the 12th Doctor and the reappearance of Matt Smith. And so... lots of emotions and tears, and then all of a sudden they end with this strange garden, and there's this mystery woman who calls herself Missy.
Missy, yeah.
And she's like, well, welcome to the promised land. This is heaven. And then she has that little evil, she makes that strange sound where I was like, sounds alien to me. Who is this person, and what's the whole deal with heaven and the promised land? And I think is it in this episode that the Doctor even says, you know, I'm not even sure that I'm going to go there or that I will reach the paradise, or that might have been of the second episode. But there is definitely a big theme that is set up here. What are your thoughts about this?
I wanted to just point out that the similarity of this garden to the one that we see in the episode where Amy is on the hospital planet.
Yes, Apollopusia, the resort planet.
Right, right. I found a great similarity in that. It could be they're just reusing a location, but I wouldn't put it past them to get those fine details. But also that connection to, if you remember, when they had that ad in the paper that directs the impossible girl to meet at the restaurant, you know, I didn't place the ad. You didn't place the ad. It wasn't the robots who placed the ad. So who sent us here? And then there's this connection. And I wasn't quite sure of what they were referring to about the phone number for the TARDIS when Clara called and the Doctor at the time, with the 10th Doctor or 11th Doctor was in the monastery and gave him that call that came to her aid. Mm-hmm. And she got that phone number. They set this stuff up so far in advance. It's amazing to me how they do that. But I think, you know, what we're looking at is we all agree. I think this is the season-long story arc that they usually have. But I wanted to point out those two bits, but especially the similarity of this garden to that other garden.
And they seem to suggest that it is this mystery woman who placed the ad in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. And who calls herself the Doctor's girlfriend.
Yes. And she's apparently keen on keeping Clara and the Doctor together.
Well, it was interesting. You know, of course, as soon as the episode aired, the Twitterverse took off, and everybody was trying to figure out who this woman is. Mm-hmm. And you know, you hear names like, well, this is like a future. One of them I saw, this was a future Clara, future Amy. They'd actually bring Amy Pond back for this. Don't know how that would work, but Doctor Who has done weirder things. That it would be the Rani, which was a rival Time Lord, a female Time Lord from the old series. She was only in the 6th and 7th Doctor's time, but that she was another possibility, that this was another Time Lord, a rival Time Lord.
Could it be the Master that we saw in one of the previous seasons?
That's also been thrown out as a conjecture.
And I think the Master was set up as a Time Lord type of character that could also regenerate, or it's kind of like unclear.
Yes. Yeah, he was a Time Lord as well. He was also a rival Time Lord. There's some suggestion that he was like a classmate of the Doctor or somewhere, you know, very similar age.
That would be interesting if this is a regeneration of the Master. That could be almost a preparation for a future female Doctor. Mm-hmm. Which I wouldn't be surprised if they go there.
Well, that's something that has been established in Doctor Who for a long time, is that Time Lords can regenerate either way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their gender is not fixed when they regenerate.
Yes.
That's something that actually has been established a long time ago.
I just wonder if they will dare to do it, because that's a huge risk to take with your, you know, the audience of fans. But it's definitely this character, it was described by Moffat as the gatekeeper of the nether sphere, and so I was thinking it's kind of like a female version of Saint Peter. Is she the one who determines who goes to heaven and who doesn't? And this is definitely a question that will come back in the next episode, where we will see her again, and there is someone else going to heaven / paradise / the Netherlands, that's where I live, the nether sphere. And so I don't know, and of course if she's a gatekeeper, that makes her someone who decides access to this realm, and of course, well, in at least in the Catholic traditions, there's always been this question: how do you live your life? And there is going to be a moment where, you know, your deeds will actually matter and will determine whether or not you will go to heaven or not. You know, it's like what you do in life, the choices that you make do matter for the afterlife. It would be very interesting to see if they will bring in that theological concept in the Doctor Who series as well. Any other points or things that we might have missed, details? There's just one thing that I wanted to mention, and that is that it seemed to me like that the new dynamic between Clara and the new Doctor seems to be modeled a bit on Sherlock and Watson. It's kind of like they do like each other, but there's also plenty to dislike. They're very different, but that keeps the relationship interesting. It keeps but more interesting, I think, than Clara and the Matt Smith Doctor. Mm. That was just a little bit, she's infatuated with him. and she said so during the Christmas episode, where they're in this village where they can't lie, and then she's like, oops, what did I just say? But it didn't have much depth, whereas here, I kind of like the fact that they don't really match.
Yeah. Well, it in case no one made it clear, they kind of put it out there explicitly: I'm not your boyfriend. The Doctor just flat out says that. I'm not your boyfriend.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, I know.
But that was actually, and then he says it wasn't actually your fault. So he blamed, it was probably the 11th Doctor that fell in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be.
It's interesting, excuse me. It's interesting that he says explicitly, I'm not your boyfriend. And at the end, this mysterious Missy character specifically calls the Doctor her boyfriend. I don't know what that means, but I don't think it's coincidence.
That's a good point. And of course, if she knows the Doctor, I think that she also mentions that she has to get used to his new face. And so she's known the Doctor for a while. So perhaps they were friends in a long forgotten past, perhaps even on Gallifrey. Is it, by the way, could this destination, paradise, heaven, be a metaphor of Gallifrey? Is that where the Doctor needs to go? I mean, because I remember in the 7th season, that's something that they kind of seem to hint at, that would be the new mission of the Doctor, is how to go back to Gallifrey.
Yeah, I think on the 50th anniversary, they made it pretty clear that Capaldi's focus would be restoring Gallifrey, finding Gallifrey and restoring it.
Oh, that reminds me, there is this other strange detail about the interior of the TARDIS. Did you notice how the big blackboard and that the mm-hmm. doctor is constantly doing calculations? And I was like, why is he doing that? What is he trying to figure out? And I'm thinking this has to do with the paradise destination thing, or perhaps with mm-hmm. finding the way to Gallifrey. That sounds like a Beatles song or something, The Way to Gallifrey. there's also a reference in this episode to a poem, O Captain, O Captain, O Captain, My Captain, Walt Whitman's poem, which I think was written to honor Abraham Lincoln. And there was this strange poem, almost a poem, this very, almost a meditation that the doctor, semi-conscious, is speaking out on when he's half asleep or he's unconscious. And you think that he's translating the dinosaur language, but I was Googling it and I couldn't find it. Is this a real poem or is this something? Because I liked it quite a bit. Very poetic. Well, if our listeners have any idea where that comes from, then I would definitely appreciate it. If this is not just rhetorics. You can join, like the new doctor says. So please join the discussion. If there's anything we missed, if there are some insights that you want to address or have us address, then please let us know. We would certainly appreciate it. We will be back, of course, with a second episode dedicated to Into the Dalek, which is featuring the nemesis of the Doctor. What's the plural of nemesis? The nemeses? infamous Daleks. Of course, also, I think a way to guarantee that we will all be on board with this new Doctor. The change, the regeneration, the new face, that might get some... take some getting used to, but at least the Daleks still look the same.
Soon, I expect. Or later. One of those.
Well, see you next time. Thanks for listening, and go to sqpn.com for all our other shows.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.